This is a tape with Evangeline Yuza, a Belgian woman who lives at 1120 University Avenue in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She was born in Roseau, Wisconsin, and also lived in Casco and Kewaunee. The interview took place on May 1, 1976. The interviewer is Leah Krieger.
That's right.
Okay.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Good morning. My name is Evangeline Yuza, and I live at 1120 University Avenue. And I'm about to give a little...
Could you tell us where you were born?
In Roseau, Wisconsin.
Okay. Did you grow up there then?
Yes, I grew up till the age of 5. We moved to Lincoln. Better known as Saint-Sauveur. It's just a few miles from Lincoln.
That was its name at that time? You mean it's been changed since then?
Well, they call it Lincoln. Saint-Sauveur is a little place about a mile and a half from there.
Oh.
And that's where we located.
Nice.
And that's where I started school at 6.
What does that name mean? Is it...
I really don't know.
Is it Belgian?
I would say so.
Huh.
I think it's a name that they named after they came to this country.
That's okay. But, maybe you should tell us your maiden name too so that we can get...
Well, I used to be Evangeline Dantoin, or better known as Evangeline Dantoin. I come from a family of 11 children and I have a very nice mother and father, very devoted parents.
Could you tell us their names and their birthplaces and dates?
Yes.
We can get your history down.
My father's name was Honora Dantoin, and my mother's name was Mary Le Captain. And she came from a family of, I believe, 7 or 8 children. She has no surviving brothers or sisters. They're all gone from that family. But I have 3 cousins, well, possibly 4 man cousins and 1 lady cousin.
Hmm. Yeah. Where was your mother born?
My mother was born, golly, in Roseau, I believe.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
Oh, how about your dad?
Well, that's where they located, in Roseau. It would be possibly a few miles, possibly maybe 3 miles from where I was born, because that's where my grandparents' place was. Right now there wouldn't be too much of it left, maybe a few trees, and there used to be a foundation, I remember. But I hear that they've got that all leveled off.
Was that out of the town of Roseau?
Yes, it was on a more of a side road.
Huh.
And I also had a aunt. Uncle that lived on that same road, very close to my parents. And there was a family by the name of LeGrave. One of their daughters lives here in town. She's Mrs. Wilfred Crevier. They used to be neighbors with us. And I can remember playing Cuyo with the children. I don't know
how
to play it now. Oh, I was small. I imagine I played it after some fashion, but they allowed me to play with them. But they had a very large family. I don't just recall how many children, but it was a larger family than ours. And we had some very nice times.
What was your mother's parents' name, just to see how far back in the history we can get?
That would be Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Le Captain. He was known as J.J. Le Captain, and he operated at the store here on the corner of what was Willow and Forest. And then they tore that building down and built a new store. And it was operated by Henry Le Captain, one of their sons, the youngest of their sons. And now it's operated by Henry's 3 sons.
Oh, so was your mother born in Roseau and then moved
yes.
to Green Bay?
No, she never moved to Green Bay.
She
stayed on the farm in and lived on the farm throughout her life. She did come to visit a while and stayed about, approximately 2.5 months.
So did her father run the store in town here?
And yes, her parents were living here, and they also had a farm out in the, at Barrett's Creek, what is known now as, yes, well, that's a place that they want to make a recreation park. Okay. And my Uncle Jewel, their son Jewel, owned that after Grandpa passed away, I guess. And the other three, there was Joseph, Desire, and Henry that ran the store. Mm-hmm. And then I had an Uncle Paul that was a contractor. He built. Mm-hmm. And he lived on University Avenue or Willow Street also. That was Uncle Paul, the captain, and he has one daughter surviving, and she lives out at Bay Beach. And then they also have a daughter-in-law, Mrs. Edmund, the captain, that's Esther, she survives, and she has a daughter. I have the three cousins that are in the store now. Joseph, he does the bookwork, and John and Thomas are in the store. Mm-hmm. And of course they have extra help because they have a very nice business there, and they run it very nice.
What were your father's parents' names? And could you tell a little bit about them too?
Yes, my dad's parents were Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Dantoin. And it's listed in this. My grandfather's name is listed in the Wisconsin Belgian Community. Hmm. By
as a settler that first came over.
Yes, my father's parents came over.
In what year was that? Probably.
Well,
in the 1850s or so. Huh?
Yes, I would say Grandpa would be 138. Years. Oh, I have that paper on my dresser.
I can turn. Okay.
Well, my grandfather died about 58 years ago, and grandmother about 51 years. So I was 11 when my grandmother died. Hmm. Yeah. Or when Grandpa died.
Is that your great-grandmother's mask card that we got a copy of?
Yes, that's
that
my...
your father's mother?
That's my grandmother's.
Oh.
That's my father's mother. There was a little correction. I was 9 when my grandmother, the captain, died. But when Grandmother Dantoin died, I don't know. That was before my time. You see, I'm the last of 11 children. My sister here is 81, who lives on Willow Street. Her name is Mrs. Joseph Fabry. He passed away. And she would recall my grandmother very good.
What was your grandmother, what was the name that was written on that mass card that we have on the card?
Buffew. Josephine Buffew. In that.
Now, whose name was that? I mean, how
that's
is it
That's my grandmother's
to
name. That was my dad's mother.
Okay, that was her maiden name?
That was her maiden name,
okay.
Yes.
I see.
They came from across. Both grandma and grandpa came from across.
When they were about in their 20s or 30s or something?
I believe they were married. Yeah. I believe they were married in the old country. Yeah. Well, then they had 11 children, and my parents had 11 children. My father was in the Peshtigo fire, and at the age of, I would say around 2, he was burning his crib. His legs were badly burnt. They were all scarred. I never knew that until when he had a stroke and we had to handle him, and I couldn't figure out why he was so badly burnt. And my older brothers and sisters told me, well, this was... burnt, you know, he was burnt in the Peshtigo fire. Mm-hmm. And then two of his sisters and one of his brothers perished in that fire. I guess the girl was one was 12 and one was about 14, and the boy was 16, and one of the neighbors said, well, maybe we should go out in the field and then we'd be safer there. And they went and they were like smothered.
From all the smoke?
From all the smoke. That's how they perished.
How was your father saved? Where did he go with it?
Well, I don't know. I suppose they must have put blankets around him or whatever, because the house was burned.
Yeah.
What do you call that when it's charred?
Charred.
The house was charred. So it was pretty close for him to be burned too.
Burned his legs.
Right.
Did he ever tell any stories that were passed on, like from his parents? Did his parents say what happened during the fire?
No, he really wasn't too talkative about it. I guess it was very painful because out of 11 children, he was the only one that was living when I came into existence that I remember. He had a sister that was married, and she was married to Joe LaCroix, and they lived kind of kitty corner from my folks' farm. But she had two sons. They had two sons, and then she died in childbirth. And then he later remarried, and I just don't know how many children they had, but possibly five or about that many, I think. And one of my dad's nephew's sons lives in Green Bay. He's Daniel LaCroix. And they have a street named after him. He used to have a farm out here. That would be on West Green Bay, near the water tower. And they've named this street LaCroix.
Is LaCroix a Belgian name?
Yes, it is.
Are there many LaCroix around out in the Belgian farming area anymore, or have they moved in?
Really, I wouldn't be able to. Oh, possibly in Algoma there are some. From one of my dad's nephews, that would be, he would have like step nephews. And they had daughters too, but he only had two nephews, and his sister died in childbirth, so I guess then his brother-in-law remarried because he had little children yet. And
could you tell me about the various places you moved when you were a child?
Oh, yes. Well, from Lincoln, then I went out. We went to Casco and lived on Joe Lucas's farm. I was 7 years old at that time. You can see I moved quite a bit when I was a child, and it didn't do too much for my schooling because I always had to, get reacquainted with, more or less start over. And then I think we moved, about 2 years later, we moved into the village of Casco. And I would say I was about 9 then. And I know that when I was 11, we moved to Kewaunee. So I had quite a correspondence with my teacher. I had a very nice teacher. Nice remembrance about that. The first day of school, she came driving into the schoolyard, and she was quite young. So I think she was about 19. I wouldn't know this for sure. Possibly she was a little older. But she was one heck of a nice teacher. Her name was Agnes. Not funny, I can't think. She's Brozek, I think. She's married to a Brozek now. Opichka, Agnes Opichka. She was a darling teacher. She's still a very nice person. I get to see her occasionally.
Oh, that's great.
And then I had a very nice friend, too, in the grades. We always cleaned the blackboards, and we did quite a nice job. And our teacher always rewarded us with something, and she always had two of the same kind. Her name was Emily Budnick. I don't know where she is now, but she was a very, very close friend. And then, when I was 11, we moved to Kewaunee, and I still corresponded with my teacher.
Which of those towns did you meet that teacher in?
That was in Casco. I think the school would be condemned by now. I don't think that they're using it. I'm not. It was located near the condensery, and I guess that's not operating now either. But it would be near that overhead bridge. Hmm. They had a big bridge. But I used to walk to school from when we lived on the farm, and that's one of my nicest recollections. When I think of the month of May, when the birds are singing, and I used to walk, and I know my sister was ill at one time, and then I just had to get out and walk by myself. But now that I recall, it was such a nice thing to be able to do. We enjoyed nature. It was a rather long walk, and we didn't have that nice big bridge. Maybe it was a good thing, because now there's a lot of traffic on it. Yeah. But it covers the whole creek. It used to be just a creek and all the...
How far did you have to walk?
Well, I'm not too good at estimating distances, but I would say between 3 and 5 miles, I would say.
That must have been pretty cold in the winter.
Well, I didn't go in winter. This would be summer. In winter, my dad used to take us with a sleigh, and he had this little house built on them. It was on the order of these little shacks that they put on Lake Winnebago. He had a little shack, and he had a little stove in there, and we kept warm. Besides wearing fleece-lined shoes, can you imagine that?
Fleece-lined shoes? Your parents put the fleece in them, or could you buy them?
No, we bought them that way. And in summer, Mother used to cut them down, and we had little shoes, because, you know, you don't save shoes. I mean, children outgrow them. And I used to wear them. We had little shoes, slippers, like, when we were really, that was something. You know, Mother had a big garden. My dad worked all along. Like, he'd go with the crew that went pressing hay. So many of my recollections are with Mother and growing up with my brothers and sisters, because Dad was working all along.
Yeah, do you think that's the reason why you moved to so many different farms, because of your father?
No. Grandma used to say if my grandpa had lived, and all these children wouldn't have perished, and that, you know, that she'd have kept a little firmer hand. And this way, he was more like a speculator, you know. He just...
Who your dad was?
Yeah, he just decided it was time to move on and do something different.
So would he buy other people's farms as he went?
Yes. We had bought a farm in Casco, and then he decided he'd go in town.
What did he do when he was in town?
Oh, that was something. He worked for a farmer by the name of Ed Bowman, and he helped plant all these trees. That the orchard is still standing right now, Hall's Orchard.
Where is that?
Hall's is in Casco. As you were entering the village, facing east, I would say, would be on your left hand. Well, that's the big orchard, Hall's big orchard. Mm-hmm. I can remember when Dad used to go past our place to go into the village, and they had a barn there, and he'd go and put the horses away. Sometimes I'd go with him. I could see him with his jacket tied around his waist. He was quite a heavy-set person, and it gets pretty hot when you're doing that kind of work.
Yeah.
And, of course, he'd leave early in the morning. It was cool, and you had to have a jacket. But by the time he came home, maybe 4:30, 5 o'clock in the evening, you know, then he had this jacket tied around his waist, and he was leading the horses. Oh. He'd have them unhitched from whatever machinery he was using, and he'd walk from the orchard, well, halfway into the village.
Yeah.
It's a small place. Have you ever been to Casco? It's and then he'd go and take the harness off the horses and feed them. And sometimes I'd go there too. Sometimes I would be going with a neighbor, going for milk. Mm-hmm. We used to walk to this neighbor's house about half a mile, and we'd go and get fresh milk.
Oh. So. Your dad worked for this farmer all the while he was in Casco?
I would say just about.
Then what?
Oh, he did work for Joe Dewey. Joe Dewey was the butcher there. and they slaughtered their own cattle, so my dad would work there.
Then what did he do once he went to Kewaunee? Kewaunee was there.
Oh, then he started at the Kewaunee Manufacturing Company.
Oh,
and they made school furniture there. And my brother started with him. He was only 17 years old. Started working with him. Well, he's since moved into Turvers. It's the only brother I have surviving. His name is also Joe Danton because, that was my grandfather's name, I guess. You know, he just wanted to keep the name of the family. I had an older brother that passed away when he was between 10 and 11 years old, and his name was also Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was more or less a practice or something that most families did. If that one child died, eventually at the end of the family, I guess then they'd call him by the same name.
Hmm.
Or just something. I've heard about this several different families where they'd name another child by that same name.
What did your brother die of?
Oh, it would amount to something like pneumonia. Mm-hmm. I think it was croup, they used to call it.
Yeah.
And they more or less choke to death, you know. But, I know my aunt and uncle, too, had a child that had that same. What my brother did, he went out too soon. He wanted to go and watch when my dad was thrashing. And evidently he was standing in a draft because he was getting along pretty good. He was really well. But he must have had, what would you call that?
A relapse,
yeah. So he was a very heavy set boy. I think Mother said he weighed 150 pounds at that age.
How old was he?
Between 10 and 11.
Yeah.
So that in itself was, you know, one of the factors possibly why he could have developed something like that. I imagine he was very plump.
Could you tell me a little bit again about the things your mother had to endure when she was bringing up you kids? And I remember you have a lot of remembrances of her.
One of the things that she would tell us that my sister and I came rather late in their life. Mother was 44 and a half when she had me, and I can remember that we wake her up at about 2 o'clock in the morning when she had to feed us. And of course those days, you breastfed all your babies, you know, unless you were very ill. She was a very hale and hearty person. And then by the time she'd have us tucked back in bed while it was time to get up, she'd get up before 4 in the morning and start the daily chores. And you bake for a big family. She had an outdoor oven. And I can recall that where she would be pulling these loaves of bread, this great big handle thing, you know. It was a bricked out oven.
So it was as if she wasn't getting hardly any sleep at all.
Right, yes. I would say she was burning her candle at both ends for a good many years. She churned her own butter. I know I used to sit there at the churn, but of course I was very youngest and it was more or less of a lark for me. I didn't stay at it too long because I didn't know too much about what I was supposed to be doing. And then she also did sewing. Those days you repaid by doing services for others. And she'd be sewing for the neighbors. So that kept her up till, about 2 in the morning. And then we woke her, you know, we'd see to it that she didn't get to sleep anymore after that almost, because we were getting up by that time. We're waking up. By the time she fed us, it was time for her to start her chores.
What kind of chores did she do that early in the morning?
Oh, I imagine she set dough for baking. She possibly, there's always little things that you do around the house. If she was making any new clothes for us, maybe she started sewing a little early. I don't know. And you make the bed, sweep the floor.
Yes.
Those days you whitewash your rooms. You didn't have these beautiful walls you have now. I can remember the living room was considered a room that was just for company. And so, and I remember that she mentioned that it was whitewashed. It was all nice and spanking and very clean. It would have a clean smell, you know, disinfectant smell, I would say. You didn't wash those walls. You just did it over when it needed
it. Oh, so you painted them over when they got dirty?
Yeah,
so paint,
well, whitewash was a, it wasn't really a paint. It was something, I would say a powder that they mixed with water, and they took this great big brush and they went over the walls.
Oh.
And it was something that would wash off. If
I
you
see,
were to
wash
the wall. So it was whitewash. When it needed to do, now they do barns like that, but they really wouldn't do your homes. But at that time, that was one of the things they did. I guess after they papered and things like that. But
she must have had to cook an awful lot to feed such a big family.
Oh, yes, yes. We didn't have too many desserts. Of course, I don't know. Dad never asked for too many desserts, and Mother was too busy cooking potatoes and meat and vegetables and things like that, and
yeah.
We used to have donuts, I know. She's very fond of nice, sweet.
And she made
donuts.
All that herself?
Right. Oh, and Belgian pies. She was good at that. And of course, you had to cook your, you had to peel your own apples, cook your own apples. You didn't go down to the store and get a can of applesauce, you know, and use it. It's all your own. Everything you had to make first, really. And like butter too, and cottage cheese. That was another thing. To do that, you'd bring your, you'd put your cheese in the back of the stove, and it would kind of separate. And it was just like whey. Then it would be kind of a yellowish substance, like watery, and the cheese part would all come kind of together. Then they put it in a, well, at that time, a little, you could get sugar in a cloth bag.
Oh.
Mostly it was a 10-pound sugar bag. They put this liquid in, this cheese and watery thing, and then she'd tie it up and then hold it over a little kettle or dish so it would drip in there. And after all that water would run out, she'd take this cheese and work it over. Then I think she used to put a little butter and pepper and salt, I know.
Oh.
And then to form this into a ball, almost like dry cottage cheese, really.
Oh, you mean after it dripped out?
Yes. And, well, my father was very fond of spreading that on bread, and so was the rest of the family.
After she formed it into a ball, then it was
Yeah, and
ready
let it
eat?
Stand a few days, yeah. So kind of aged. It got a little, well, it had flavor, let's put it that way.
What did it taste like? Did you?
Like a cheese, like aged cheese.
Huh.
It didn't go like Limburger cheese or nothing like that, but it had a little distinctive flavor.
What was that called?
Well, that would be cottage cheese balls.
Let's see. It seems to me
we used to call that stuffy.
Stuffy.
That was cheese for us. It wasn't cheese like, I'm trying to think of the name for the cheese now. I can't think of it right now, but that was one of the dishes. And of course, you know, on the farm they had a butcher. They'd make their own Belgian trip. You get these casings, and nowadays you buy these casings about years ago. There were no such things as stores that sold all these things. They had to do their own, prepare their own casings and things, and then get the meat prepared, cooked. And they had this meat grinder. They grind their own meat in that. But then they had, it was a regular sausage stuffer.
Hmm.
It would be a tubes type of thing. You put that, extended that at the end of the meat grinder, and as you turned, it would fill this tube, and it would go into these casings, and you'd make links of sausage like you do now, like your bratwurst. Right. You made your own things like that.
Gee. And you made that all from your own slaughtered cattle?
Right. We didn't butcher beef. We butchered hogs.
Did you have cattle at all, or did you mostly raise hogs?
No, we had cattle, but that was strictly for milking. When it came time for thrashing, or if there was a wedding, then we purchased beef. I know nowadays, some people have butchered their own or take it to the slaughterhouse and have butchers, but we never had too much beef, except when there was an occasion like the thrashing, and that was always a very nice time.
Why was thrashing such an occasion?
Oh, you had to feed all the men that thrashed.
Oh, I see.
There were possibly 18 men sometimes.
Dude.
It was a big thing. So, the way they notified, well, you asked for this certain man that did all this to come and do your thrashing, but you never knew really when they were going to come because it all depended on the weather, and if they got through at one place, then they'd blow their whistle. And we were alerted that they were going to come maybe sometime this week or in 3-4 days, but we didn't know. Sometimes they'd get done unusually early, and you'd hear that whistle, and you knew they were coming to your place. Then you had to get going.
Oh, I can imagine.
It was, well, of course, Mother would always house clean, but with all that work, one of my jobs was to get all the dishes out, the extra dishes that you would use, for that many people. And I'd wash them all up and wipe them. I used to like to just polish them up nice. And then there was always put extension on the table.
Maybe you better turn this over.